If you just tuned in, you're listening to 3CR, 855M in your dial, 3cr.org.au, streamed online and via the playback service. You can also listen via the community radio app. This is 3CR's special Invasion Day broadcast today. We're going to be on the air for another 3 hours or so yet. Earlier, we crossed live to the speeches down at Parliament, and just before that song, we heard the Welcome to Country from Fane Garvey and Jaden Williams-Briggs for the event that happened this morning down at Camp Sovereignty, the dawn service down there. They've been doing the dawn service for a fair few years now each morning down at Camp Sovereignty, paying respect to our elders who have passed away and all the Aboriginal people who have fought against invasion and who have been subjected to the massacres and all of the other crap that colonialism has impacted upon our people. In just a minute or so, we are going to cross live to Kelly, who I had in the studio with me earlier this morning. She is down at the rally now. We're going to hear the perspective of some of the people who have attended the rally today, hear why they've come out in support, hear what Invasion Day means to them, and give them an opportunity to say what they want to say as well. Just on that note too, if you are listening and you want to text anything through, you can text the 3CR text line 0488 09855. Send me a message, let me know what today means to you, let me know what you're up to, what your plans are for the rest of the day, maybe there's a shout out you want to give on air to somebody else who might be listening. But yeah, send me a message, let me know what Invasion Day means to you as well. We're going to go to one more quick song, and then hopefully we'll be crossing to Kelly down at the rally. This one is Burn the Colony.
I'm just getting the rocket for the streets one time. Slide into the rhythm with the single line. Are you seeing all the symbolic signs? The show when I spread towards a simpler time. Just gonna hit the floor, the peaks one time. Climb up to the peak of all the steepest heights. I drop it down the crimson skies.
Burn the colony.
Just to what the kingdom like. I'm just getting the rocket for the streets one time. Slide into the rhythm with the single line. Are you seeing all the symbolic signs? The show when I spread.
Shit. Naturally, I keep it neutral in the truest sense. Perfectly balanced with practicing all of the rudiments. Raise the lords of lords, of course. He got the grooviness, and yes, he got that staunch walking in the gloominess. He got the tiki torch, scorching, oh so luminous. Them elders passed it on to the strong to keep it moving. Yeah, follow the ancient foot tracks day by day. I ain't never need to look back, I'm on my way. If I ever did look back, it's only to say, thank you for paving the way. You are my saving grace. Respecting them old people who forfeit our freedom. They're the reason that we're walking and breathing near this evening. Tell me what you know about dreaming. Tell me, my child, what do you believe in? I'm steaming.
I'm just in the rocket for the streets one time. Slide into the rhythm with the single line. Are you seeing all the symbolic signs? The show when I spat towards a simpler time. Just gonna hit the floor, the beats one time. Climb up to the peak of all the steepest heights. I
That was Burn the Colony. We're going to cross live now to Kelly down at the rally. Are you there, Kelly? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, Kieran. Can you hear me?
Yep. How you going?
Yeah, look, it is a wicked day down here. We just had some of the most amazing speeches. You know, shout out to all the aunts and aunties who were up there today. It was pretty emotional, actually. And, you know, doing the march now, it's pretty wild. Like, there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of people here, a lot of allies here, a lot of Indigenous folks here. It's been a really good day, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, good to hear. What's the vibe like down there?
Do you know, it's actually really peaceful. I've got to say, I'm seeing a lot of, like, kids down here with, like, little signs and, you know, the little hats on, and so it's super cute. But the vibes are all around real good.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Yeah, and is there...
What's your name, sir?
Jackson.
Jackson. We've got Jackson. I want to ask you, Jackson, how are you finding the day?
Well, it's pretty hot, but it's amazing to see the turnout today.
What's your favourite part so far?
I think just the support for this movement. Yeah, just seeing the support, and the speeches are always great, and they really, give a lot of gusto to everything, I think. Yeah.
Thanks, Jackson. Jackson's super tall, everyone, so that was really hard to hold the mic up. But thanks so much, Jackson. I really appreciate that. You have a good day.
Yeah, so you got anyone else down there that wants to jump on?
On 3CR?
Always was. Always will be. Aboriginal land.
Woo! So the vibes are pretty good down here.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good to hear. What's the route like for the march? Oh, yeah, sorry. What's the march route you're taking down there? Are you heading down the Flinders or?
Yeah, so we're currently on, let me check out the street. We're on Burke Street. We're walking down, we're kind of on the corner of Exhibition and Burke Street right now. As I said, like, there's a lot of support here today. There's so many families. Like, it's a really peaceful vibe. So I hope that can happen throughout the day.
Yeah, yeah, and, you know, it's important that it tries to, you know, stay peaceful and stuff.
So we have someone else that wants to have a bit of a chat. Carlos, is that right? Yeah, come on in. Hey, Carlos, what have you got to say about today?
Hi, friends. Good to be here. Well, here we are. Every year we turn up, right, of course. What does this mean to me? What does this mean to many of us? Here we are supporting Indigenous sovereignty. I think it's important, especially now after this new moment, after the politics of treaty, right? So I think this is a particularly important moment to give even more support to First Nations, given the kind of the new moment that we're entering here in Vic after this. The other thing that kind of matters to me, and many of us who sort of think of politics in the anti-colonial register, is always, well, we come here and the politics that we're sort of supporting, the politics that we're engaged with back home, you know, in my case, Venezuela, Latin America, always learning and reading through the politics of Indigenous sovereignty here. Yeah.
That is so well said, Carlos. I feel like this is an important day for us, but not only for us, but for you too, to show your solidarity. And we obviously share our solidarity with you. It's a pretty hard time for you guys as well over there.
Yes, we are relearning and reliving what imperialism, colonialism means, what the theft of resources means, what an attack on sovereignty means, all in this kind of, in this kind of 21st century setup in Venezuela. But of course, this is and has been the reality here for, you know, over two centuries. So I've actually been thinking plenty of, you know, about Indigenous sovereignty and First Nations politics and demands and claims and organizing, as I've been thinking about what we're trying to do now in Venezuela as we confront this new moment of U.S. imperialism over there.
Well said. Thank you so much, Carlos. I hope you continue to enjoy the day and, take care of each other.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry,
So that was Carlos. I don't know about you, Kieran, but, like, that's well said, right? Like.
Yeah, yeah. I know Carlos, actually. Carlos from Lasno. He does a lot of great work around Latin American solidarity.
Oh, he's, yeah, a great man to speak to. He has some really wise words, and
that's
it for us. We're going to we're heading into a bit of music, so I don't know if you can hear me well, but
yeah, no worries. Well, we'll cross to you again soon. See if you got anyone else that wants to have a yarn.
Yeah, perfect, Kieran. See you soon.
All right, see ya. And yeah, you know, it is important that we remember today that, you know, while we are fighting colonialism and occupation here, our fight is not alone. You know, we're not the only ones in the world fighting this. There are many nations right across the world that are also today and every day fighting their own form of colonialism, occupation and imperialism. You know, it's very important that we mention that as well and mention our solidarity, especially with, you know, people like people from Venezuela who, you know, as you would be aware, recently have been subjected to more imperialism from the United States, you know, with the kidnapping of Maduro and the theft of their oil and, you know, all the other stuff that's happening against them over there. You know, it's, as they say, one struggle, one fight. We're all in this fight together against the common enemy, and that common enemy is the Western Empire, something that mob have been dealing with here for, you know, nearly 250 years now. It's been 250 years of resistance against our occupation and against the invasion here. And it's, you know, there's a few things as well I wanted to kind of touch on from the speeches, just to give the audience, I suppose, a more broader perspective on some things. There was, you know, as we heard, a lot of support for the recent treaty process that the Victorian state government is undertaking. But we also heard some speakers like Uncle Robbie Thorpe who are speaking out against that process. Who are speaking out against that process and, you know, who rightfully so name it as something that is not actually a treaty, even though that's what they call it. You know, it is, at the end of the day, a domestic agreement under Victorian state legislation. And it is something that doesn't actually give much to mob. You know, at the end of the day, it's not something that will give us any land back. There's no designated seats in parliament. There is no actual self-determination and autonomy over our rights, over our resources and over our land. It's not going to do anything to, you know, address the ongoing hostilities against us. There's no mention of peace in there or ending the war that has been happening here for over two centuries now. And there's a lot of mob who, you know, do support treaty, but there's also a lot of mob who don't. There's a lot of mob who are against the state treaty processes. Uncle Robbie Thorpe and myself and many others are against this process. In fact, if you tuned in this morning from 9 o'clock for the first hour of the broadcast, you would have heard some snippets of a panel we did last night down at Camp Sovereignty where we talked about the negatives and the cons of the treaty process and how a lot of mob don't actually support it. You know, there's a lot of reasons we don't support it, as I just mentioned, around actual material impact. But there's also a lot of other issues that we find with it, stuff like the terms of reference, stuff that is being written by the Victorian State Parliament. It's not terms of references on, you know, on from us. It's not mob who are writing the terms of references. It's not mob who are determining the treaty process. It is something that we've just been chucked on the bandwagon of and essentially have to go along with it. And, you know, we heard from Uncle Gary Foley as well. And there's actually a quote that I really like from Uncle Gary Foley. And, you know, I'm going to butcher it a bit. I don't remember exactly how it goes word for word. But the gist of it is he talks about how the generation before him, you know, they tried many ways to liberate themselves and to seek equality and justice. But for the most part, their tactics had failed. And he even goes on to say that, you know, that much can be said similar about his own generation, how many of their tactics and their campaigns and what they were aiming for has essentially failed. And as a result, it is up to the next generation to really think for themselves, to, you know, come up with their own ways forward, to come up with their own ideas and their own campaigns and their own demands and how we achieve those demands so that we can take it that extra step further. And, you know, this is something that I find is really quite lacking quite often within mob politics. You know, quite a lot of mob, for better or worse, and, you know, for their own reasons, don't get me wrong, quite a lot of them are still very much clinging on to these old demands of the 1900s, you know, stuff like treaty, for example. The main push for treaty first come about in, well, it was before 1988, but, you know, back in 1988, they had a major campaign for treaty, and, you know, a lot of our much respected elders and political leaders of the time really pushed forward with this idea for treaty. And, you know, they'd done it for their own, you know, they had their own opinions about it and stuff, don't get me wrong. But we are now, what, nearly 40 years on, and what we are finding is that quite a lot of these demands and quite a lot of the hope that was instilled in treaty is not something that we can continue to go for anymore. You know, we can't place our hope and faith in these treaty processes with the new information that we have now. You know, we are in a digital age now where we can learn a lot more about stuff like treaties, and where we can learn a lot more about how treaties have worked abroad in other colonies, you know, in particular New Zealand, the United States, and Canada. And the thing is, when we look at their treaties and we look at the material gains and the impacts and whatever else of those treaties, it really draws into question whether or not treaty is something we should actually be pushing for. You know, the thing is, if you take a look at the actual cold hard stats and you look at the predicaments of those people, they're quite similar to our stats and predicaments here. You know, you look at New Zealand, you look at Canada, you look at the United States, and you look in their jails, for example, who's the most incarcerated people in those places. And it's First Nations people. And in fact, you know, their incarceration rates per capita are only just behind ours here in so-called Australia. Likewise, when we look at stuff like their homelessness, when we look at their health and life expectancy, when we look at their employment opportunities, and we look at all these other factors of social well-being, we find that they're in pretty much the same predicament that we are here. You know, they're still several times more likely to be homeless on their own land. They've still got massive life expectancy gaps compared with the non-Indigenous populations. They're still fighting to protect their sacred sites, which are still being blown up for resource extraction and for oil pipelines and whatever else. Treaty hasn't done anything to actually properly address the material conditions in those other nations. So, you know, judging off that, why would we think that a treaty would have any other kind of impact, positive impact here in so-called Australia? There's been literally like hundreds, if not thousands, of treaties that have been signed in New Zealand, United States, and Canada between their colonial governments and their First Nations peoples. And all of those treaties have been broken. There isn't a single treaty that has been signed in those colonies with the Indigenous people there that hasn't been broken. Every single one has been broken. And quite often, most of them are broken within the first year or so of those treaties being signed. You know, it wasn't like they were broken 100 or more years later, although they were that as well. But they were nearly immediately broken by the colonial powers. So, you know, it really draws into question why we should be pushing for a treaty here. We got Kelly on the line. I'm going to go back to Kelly. Are you there, sis?
Yeah, I'm here, bro. Yeah, we're, can you hear me well?
Yep.
Yeah, cool. So we are continuing walking down Bourke Street, and I've run into Pierre. Hey, Pierre, how are you?
I'm good, thank you very much.
So what does today mean for you?
Well, I'm a long-time unionist. I'm in the Australian Services Union, and the union movement and the movement for Aboriginal rights have got a long history of solidarity together. So that is one of the reasons why I'm here today.
And what a great reason to be here.
It's a great reason to be here, and it's great to see so many people here. There's tens of thousands of people. It's always a great day, but it's always very important, I mean, to hear the speakers, the range of issues that are brought back. It's not a question of, you know, the trauma and the dispossession of colonisation, but it's the current issues about land, about land rights, about incarceration, about the Indigenous people or First Nation people who die in custody through police actions, and also the social economic conditions that a lot of our First Nations sisters and brothers actually find themselves in, which we need as a union movement, as a collective, to struggle and to organise together.
Wow, and I don't even know where to start with that. That is such a great perspective to have, especially at this point where we're still celebrating this Invasion Day. And every year, it's still the same thing. We talk about the same stuff. Like, what do you think we could do to create a space for us all to be inclusive?
Look, I think, you know, this day is really, really important, but it's only a day. And so it's a question of, and you only work on these issues and actually change this issue if we actually organise. So it's a question of organisation. What do we do in the 364 days between these days? How do we organise? How do we campaign? How do we work together? These are big questions, but that's the only way to go. And certainly from a long-time unionist, I can say that collectively, the trade union movement could do a lot more and could actually go back to some of its origins, where it actually took industrial action in solidarity and in support of our First Nations sisters and brothers.
Well said, Pierre. Kieran, I think that's really important to have a discussion about as well, is we often talk about what can be done, right? There you go from Pierre talking about doing some, you know, some industrial actions. Like, these are the things that we've seen in the past that work. So,
yeah. Yeah, and, you know, like, I completely agree. And, like, we really need to see more of that industrial action. In fact, something I often talk about on my radio show is how, you know, we have industrial actions like the blockade against South African apartheid that happened in the 90s. And, you know, these days we've got the BDS campaign in support of Palestine. But, you know, where are the similar campaigns against apartheid Australia?
Yeah, exactly. And I think if we look at today, we look right now, we have an amazing movement. And that's what the solidarity represents, right? It's like we come together when we're not divided. And I think we spoke about this earlier today. If we continue to stay united, then as people, we have a bigger pull.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it's something that really needs to happen, because at the end of the day, we are only 3% of the population. There's only so much that we can do by ourselves. We really need that support of the, you know, conscientious non-Indigenous people who want to stand with us and want to stand on the right side of history and stand against genocide, apartheid and occupation.
Well, speaking of people standing with us, we have some beautiful folks from Flat Out, or they're holding a prison, Homes Not Prisons banner, and we love that statement. So I feel like we're going to have a little bit of a chat, if that's good with you.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, cool. All right. Well, this is Hattie. Hey, Hattie.
How's it going, Kelly? How are you?
Yeah, I'm really good. Thanks for stopping and having a chat with us. What's today mean for you?
It means showing up for Indigenous resistance, which I'll continue to do in whatever form that takes, and supporting Indigenous self-determination on this continent.
I love that. And that's such a big statement, right? Is, you know, you stand with us, you always have. Flat Out has always stood with us. And it's such a powerful movement. And, you know, with allies like you guys, change is possible.
That's right. Yeah. Thanks, Kelly. Yeah.
Thanks, Hattie. You guys enjoy the rest of the rally. So we're going to keep heading down to, what street are we on? On Swanson. We're heading on down on Swanson Street now. You'll have to excuse my sense of direction. Absolutely awful. Makes me wonder, maybe I need to get back out in country and learn the old ways, maybe. So we're heading down to Flinders Street now. They're setting up down there. So I might leave it there and we'll catch up with you when we get down there, Kieran.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, cool. All right. Cheers, we'll speak soon.
Talk soon. Yeah, you know, it is something that really needs to happen, this whole solidarity with First Nations people. You know, at the end of the day, it's, as I was mentioning earlier in the show, and as I quite often talk about on radio, you know, it's something that is more than just solidarity with First Nations people. You know, when you stand in solidarity with First Nations people, you're not just doing it for us, you're doing it for yourself as well. You know, there's plenty of issues that colonialism has caused that are impacting not just my people, but your people as well, if you're a non-Indigenous person. You know, climate change and climate collapse and biodiversity collapse and, you know, the poisoning of our airways and water and soil and et cetera, et cetera. You know, this is one of the prime examples of this. At the end of the day, you can't live on a poisoned planet. At the end of the day, you know, once all the drinking water has been poisoned or been siphoned into AI data centers or mines or cotton plantations or whatever else, you know, what are you going to drink? You know, what happens when we continue to trash the environment and these bushfires continue to get worse and worse every year when they're burning down homes and they're burning down the last bits of bushland that still remain, when they're threatening farms and, you know, when they're polluting our airs with all this smog, as we've seen the last couple of days here in Melbourne, you know, what's going to happen then? People need to come and stand with us for, if not for us, for themselves, for their own self-preservation. Because at the end of the day, you know, we have the solution. And, you know, it might sound grand to say so, it might sound romanticized, but at the end of the day, it's a fact though as well. First Nations people have lived here for, depending on who you ask, anywhere from 120 to 250 plus thousand years. And during that time, we've had laws and culture here that have ensured harmony with the environment and harmony with each other and self-preservation and longevity. You know, there's not many other people in the world that can say the same. And, you know, it's no shade on other Indigenous people. It's not even just an Indigenous person thing. You know, there's only actually a handful of Indigenous people, Indigenous, you know, cultures and societies around the world that can say the same sort of thing. You know, that can say that they have a system that has proven itself to work for over 10,000 years. You know, you go and look at Europe, though, and every couple of hundred years, or maybe 1,000 years or so max, their empires collapse, their societies and their political systems collapse, because they're not actually ones that are harmonious and, you know, ones that exist with longevity. They're not ones that are something that can provide sustainability. You know, that's something that Indigenous people in this continent have achieved, though. And we achieved it thousands and thousands of years ago, and we've been practicing it for thousands and thousands of years. And, you know, something I often hear when I talk about this stuff is, you know, people say it's too radical, it's too extreme, it's, you know, it's too much. But then, you know, in reply to that, I would ask people to look around at what they live in. Is not climate collapse too extreme? You know, is the wealth inequality that we live under and the growing wealth inequality and the growing homelessness rates and unemployment and, you know, health impacts, are they not extreme? You know, are these not radical things to be trying to survive in this destructive system? You know, what we're talking about is no more extreme or radical or, you know, out there than what we're having to live through as the alternative. So, it's, yeah, something to really sit back and think about and ponder. And I just want to quickly go back to something I was mentioning before about treaties, you know, giving that nuanced perspective on treaty, the pros and the cons. As I was mentioning just before we crossed the Kelly, you know, there's been all these treaties in these other colonies, and they've all been broken. All of them have failed to achieve any form of equality between Indigenous and non-Indigenous people in terms of stats and, you know, life quality and et cetera, et cetera. Australia is going to be no different if we have treaties here with the Australian government. In fact, if we go and look at Australia's own track record, we look at the treaties that Australia has already entered into internationally with other nations, how many of them have been broken? So many of them have been broken. And, you know, some of them, don't get me wrong, you know, treaties that for whatever reason may not be broken in Australia's interest. When I say Australia's interest, I'm talking about the interest of the broader population here, not the colonial government and the corporations. But there's also treaties that are broken, in my opinion, with no excuses. And in fact, it's absolutely disgusting that they're broken. I'm talking about treaties like our human rights treaties that we've signed onto. Do you know how often Australia violates their human rights treaties? It's so often. In fact, I think in the last decade or so, the United Nations themselves have cited Australia something like 50 plus times for breaking human rights conventions and treaties that Australia is a signatory to. And when that happens, most of the time, something like 95%+ of the time, there's no actual justice around those broken treaties. You know, nothing ever comes to fruition to the aggrieved party when we break these human rights treaties. It's just business as usual in the colony. They continue on. They continue to break these treaties. Now, if they're going to break treaties with other sovereign nations that they accept and recognize as sovereign nations, who's to say they're not going to break treaties with us? We know that they are going to do that. So, you know, it's just something to be mindful of, I suppose. We do have some more speeches as well that are going to be happening down at Flinders soon. We'll cross to them in just a moment. But, I just really want people to just sit on that and just think about that. You know, the whole treaty debacle and our treaties actually are saving grace. You know, I see it as a nail in the coffin, personally. It's not a saving grace to me. It's a nail in the coffin. You know what a treaty will do? A treaty will give Australia their, you know, legal justification for occupying our lands. Something to be very mindful of. But yeah, we're going to cross now to some speeches that are starting down there.
Hey, Brav, can you hear me there?
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. So we've just reached the Flinders Street, out front of Flinders Street. I just wanted to let you know that we're going to sign into some of the speeches now. So I will come back to you shortly.
Yep, sounds good.
All right.
Talk soon.
Bye.
Beware of the periphery. Don't go outside of the martial line.
Yeah, they've got some more speeches that are starting down at Flinders. We might see if we can get a line into that. Maybe not. I'm not too sure. I might be having a bit of technical difficulties. That's all right. Look, we don't have to cross to all the speeches today. It's they're talking about much of the same stuff at the end of the day, and you know, I'm sure we've all heard enough about pro-treaty for the day. You know, we had 2 hours of it earlier when we were crossing to the speeches down there. But yeah, you know, I just really want to provide a balanced perspective on this whole treaty business. Because, you know, at the end of the day, as I was saying just before, at the end of the day, what it's actually doing is legitimizing Australia. You know, it's giving Australia the legitimate authority to be here on our lands. As it currently stands, the Australian government is an illegal occupation under international law. You know, they can say what they want and they can pretend however they want that they're a legitimate entity, but they're not. Their whole foundation was based on the fiction of terra nullius, of no man's land. They come here and they set up, they had no consent, they had no permission, they had no right to come and occupy our lands and set up on our lands and start stealing our resources and locking our people up on concentration camps, and even today continue to lock our people up en masse and steal our children. They've got no right to be doing any of that stuff under actual international law. But if they were to enter into a treaty, then, you know, what's that say? It says that Australia has a legitimacy to be here. It's recognizing Australia's so-called sovereignty over our land. And, you know, it's not something that I personally agree with. You know, I don't believe that's the way forward for us. And, you know, as I was mentioning just before, why are we doing this? Why are we legitimizing climate collapse? And why are we legitimizing inequality? And, you know, why are we legitimizing all the negative impacts that colonialism has brought to these shores for the past 250 years? And not only that, you know, as I was also mentioning, we've been here for 100,000 plus years. Our culture has been going for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, much longer than the British Empire has ever existed. And our culture and our sovereignty and our nations will outlive the British Empire. You know, there's no point signing the treaty with some interim little government that's going to exist on what's essentially a little blip on the radar of time. Because, you know, that's what it is at the end of the day. The British Empire, stretching right back before they came here, stretching right back to their very foundations, is a drop in the ocean compared to how long our people have been here, how long our cultural society and governance systems have existed here. And there will be a day when they don't exist anymore. You know, there will be a day when the British Empire no longer exists, when American Empire no longer exists, when Australia no longer exists. And, you know, that's the day that I'm waiting for. That's the day I'm holding out for. You know, it might be in my lifetime, it might be in my grandchildren's lifetime, but we can be sure that it is coming soon. You know, when we look at the average lifespan of these empires, their time is up. They're pushing it as it is, and we can see that they're pushing it as it is, you know, by the fact that they're collapsing into fascism, because that's the only way that they can now sustain themselves, through imperialism and through fascism. And without that imperialist aggression, without that fascism, without what they're doing, they're not going to be able to survive very much longer. And in fact, you know, as they continue to scramble with their fascism and their imperialism, they're just bringing their own demise even closer and closer. They're exposing their own contradictions of their existence, and they're turning their own populations against them. You know, look at America right now. All the people that are rising up and fighting back against ICE and against Trump and against the empire over there. You know, it's not going to be long before we see a similar here, where we see people starting to actually, and I'm talking about non-Indigenous people here, when we see non-Indigenous people actually starting to rise up against this colonial occupation and the fascism that they enact. And as more people rise up, they're going to double down on their fascism. But, you know, that's not a time for us to then back down. That's a time for us to make sure that we stand firm in our principles, in our integrity, in our survival. Because it's the only way forward. It's the only way that we're all going to survive at the end of the day. It's either that or they're going to absolutely trash this world. On that note, I'm going to go to another song. This is a song by Birds and Fred Leone. It's a deadly song, this one.
Someone I ain't never seen before to say he's a captain of men, but ain't believing our love. From the land of the white skin, he's self-righteous, a murderer without license. With the spear, I'm the nicest, thinking that I might just wait till night hits. Then I move in silence, when the moon at its highest, and my soul is defiant. I'm consumed by desire to kill. Any white devil wanna test my will, then he finna get burnt by the fire I feel. Look him in the eye and hold his spirit still. He's hoping I don't catch him, but I know I will.
Stand on the shoreline, coming, coming. Might not wanna cross mine, wanna take it from me. Fire in my eye, but we ain't running. Wanna murder, let's ride, eh, eh. Stand on the shoreline, coming, coming. Might not wanna cross mine, wanna take it from me. Fire in my eye, but we ain't running. Wanna murder, let's ride, eh, eh.
Yeah, they say that it came in peace, but our blood still stains the beach. Roll the dice, we gon' play for keeps. The sacred place ain't a place to preach.
No, no, no.
No white faith and a black belief.
We're just gonna cut to this.